Fourth of July weekend. We're right in it. A holiday filled with symbols that still hold meaning for so many of us in this room. Symbols of promises made by our forefathers and our ongoing challenge and gift to generations to come. Promises made to protect the innocent and underprivileged, to make sure that discrimination be squashed, giving all who put their mind to it to live that American dream. But especially promises made that are even more meaningful to those of us sitting in this room at this hour. Promises guaranteeing religious liberty for all, neither hindering nor promoting one faith over another. It is where faith does intersect with politics in the best way. Knowing without fear of persecution, we can worship in rooms like this all across America. But not just rooms like this. Other rooms worshiping in very different ways and sometimes on different days. For those who regularly worship here and know that we've been studying Pohl's book, Living into Community, and the four essential practices of Christian faith communities, you just might wonder how I'm going to bring us to our next featured topic with all of this 4th of July jam. Oh, never fear, for the very next topic after 2 weeks of chatting about gratitude comes, wait for it, promise keeping. Promise keeping for we Christ followers who just happen to reside in America. Christians who are called to stand for God's goodness and compassion, grace and generosity, in spite of what angry and divided politics of our land from both sides of the aisle scream and tweet. We, my friends, are commanded to be loving and ready to equip those less fortunate. It's not too far off from how I was raised thinking what this country was about. Not that everyone in the U.S. was a Christian, but that the one nation under God stuff meant that we were to be a nation built on keeping our promises, built upon a code of ethics, like Marvel's Captain America. You know, it is how we, people like you and me, are to conduct business. At least that's what I thought. We treat others as we hope to be treated, right? And we turn the other cheek, and we take care of those in need as instructed by our main man Jesus in Matthew's 10th and 25th chapters, where it is written, "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. And whoever gives a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of the disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward." And then that meets the 25th chapter, "Come you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me. Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." These words certainly part of the inspiration, for we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, with liberty and justice for all kind of stuff. We are believers, and we stand strong and make the same choices in Joshua's 24th chapter. "Now therefore revere the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your ancestors served and serve the Lord. Now if you are unwilling to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." Oh, how I love that. Look, I'm not throwing a lot of scripture at you just because I think it's cool, but as we gather here together and consider the practice and the idea of promise keeping while facing down the 4th of July, I just want us as an American Christian, or should I say Christians who live in America, to stop compartmentalizing for a moment and see how they should intersect. Besides, it's hard to ignore the 4th, right? It's symbolically overloaded. Shoot, look at how I'm dressed today. There are flags, fireworks, the rockets, red glare, and at least sparklers, and cherry popsicles, and the apple pie, and that awesome blueberry strawberry tart thing on a cookie crust. Oh, and that watermelon, and hot dogs. Gosh, why is it that I'm always talking about food around here? Now I know, pew dwellers, all this talk about the 4th blurs the lines between church and state a bit, but I kind of look at it as a celebration of the great gift of Joshua's choice, where we can take a gander at the intermingling of citizenship. I can fully celebrate my citizenship not only in a country whose constitution was forged to ensure my freedom to choose my faith, but also how it falls under my citizenship in the greater international, no, wait, cosmic kingdom of God. And how in my choosing comes the foundational ethics which inform the practices of the community which I value. Do I need a visual? It's a roundabout in a neighborhood, you know, like it's doing the do-si-do at a 4th of July square dance. Oh, how I wish I could light up some sparklers in here, you know, and do those circles. It would certainly give me the ability to illuminate the cyclical relationship. You know, use your imagination. Can you see it? Interconnected like poles, practices from gratitude to promise keeping to truth telling to hospitality. All of these choices and actions impact my life, your life, our life, and not only this faith community, but from faith community to city, to county, to state, to nation of red, white, and blue. But it doesn't stop there. It goes from nation to nation and earthbound to moon and back. Promises we make here affect promises we make over there. Oh, how I wish I could light up a sparkler right now. Ethicist Margaret Farley captures this well when she says, "The history of the human race, as well as the story of any one life, might be told in terms of commitments. At the heart of this history lies a sometimes hidden narrative of promises and pledges and oaths and contracts, committed beliefs and projected visions. At the heart of any individual story, too, lies the tale of her or his commitments, wise or foolish, sustained or broken, fragmented or integrated into a whole. Promises provide the internal framework for every relationship and every community. They function like the hidden supports in a well-built house. They, in essence, define relationships and expectations. Per Hannah Arendt, without being bound to the fulfillment of promises, we would never be able to keep our identities. It is especially through promises that seem one-sided, like our ensuring protection for the least of these, where we begin to experience and share with others a glimpse of God and God-heartedness. In Pohl's book, she writes, "We don't ordinarily think about the connections between the practices of God and our faithfulness to certain promises and people, but the God we worship and serve is one who has made promises to us and lives in a covenantal relationship with us and is faithful even when we are unfaithful. Promise-making, promise-keeping, fidelity, and commitment are central to how we relate to God and to how God relates to us. We live by faith in a God whose character is steadfast love, so it should not surprise us that making promises and keeping promises are also at the heart of what is best in our human relationships. And that extends," she says, "to the communities in which we dwell." Which keeps bringing me back to the old red, white, and blue, whose colors don't run. Now, I am no constitutional scholar, but I still remember some significant moments in my childhood when I began to really learn and comprehend just what it meant. And though my education may have been simple, a bit naive and skewed, I remember gaining serious appreciation for the forefathers and mothers of this country who risked it all so that I could eventually stand before a room full of people and have the right to preach and teach as my religious freedom allowed. And as I recall, it was in seeking religious liberty that lured the earliest immigrants to the North American shores. Am I not right there? I mean, the shores on which promises were made to protect the rights of others seeking the same. Sadly, the average pilgrim wasn't very good at treating others as they hoped to be treated, and quite often broke some big promises when, while they faced folks that didn't look, talk, or worship like they did. The oppressed became the oppressor. Promises were broken. First to the Native Americans, then the African Americans, Asian Americans, others who floated in throughout history, especially non-Protestant immigrants from Europe like the Irish and the Poles and the Italians. And there is no doubt that this continues to occur, name the ethnicity, and all of those who have suffered from xenophobic exclusion. And that is kind of an awkward realization for any of us who are in this room who are not 100% Native American, right? Because it took some distant relative to hop on or be unwillingly drug onto a boat at one time or another for you and I to gather in a place like this on this day. It's a sad thing, but even sadder when it came at a believer's hand who conveniently forgot the least of these, or Micah's charge, "God has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God," meets Isaiah's correct oppression. Meet Zechariah, "Do not oppress the widow or the orphan, the stranger or the poor, and do not devise evil in your hearts against one another." How, after all of that, can we still find ways to justify the broken promise, always seeking a clause in the covenant? Look, I know that I've promised not to bring politics into this pulpit, and I know that I'm teetering on breaking that promise. I actually believe that politics has no place during the sacred time we gather and worship. This is a time not to be about a flag or a nation. It's about God's kingdom. But some things have been hijacked for political manipulation, and that has everything to do with our faith and faith practices. Caring for other and planet is not political. It is very, very much a God thing. How we love God and how we are to love our neighbor should be part of how believers live in spite of political sway. In this place, especially, when we consider the practice of promise keeping, we cannot deny that the most important promise as a believer is to God and not nation. Any other order, and we've got an idolatry problem on our hands. But there's something that really fires up my bottle rocket even more, and that is when morally decrepit groups of blowhards use our holy and loving and sacred texts to spew hate and justify their bigotry. Hooded clans linked with historic acts of brutality inflicted upon difference and minorities and alternate faith traditions. Oh, bam! Like a black cat firecracker, it gets to me. The little girl who so naively believed that such hate and bigotry was behind us. The little girl who ran through the sprinkler among the fruited plains, who truly believed in the promises made not only by her religious forefathers but her nation's. Gee willikers, Opie Taylor, how can this still be going on? I have to believe it is when humans lose touch with God's heart and forget the loving and benevolent God who is the ultimate promise keeper. When we lose touch with God, promises are hard to keep. Covenants are broken. But then a group of teens from the heartland make their way to our sanctuary, seeking God's heart, finding it, and are prepared to offer it to others, and we get to host them. Welcome, Shelbyville, Indiana, Disciples of Christ. And I am reminded that when we get it right, we get it right. And through our examples, we can make things right. Because fellow Christians who happen to be American, we are promise keepers, and with God's help, we will remain so. We will treat others as we are called to do, and engage the neighbor right next door, or mosey through our towns and counties and states right across the nation, from Shelbyville, Indiana, to Charlottesville, right on over to mission work in Virginia Beach, as a covenant people. And in a way, I think that is very patriotic, because we do this making sure that others have that very same right. And not only those that look and pray like we do, but especially those who don't. And maybe we'll even offer them a sparkler or two.